It's an opportunity to reset the UK's risk appetite. It's not just an advertising campaign, it's culture change for a nation.
But today is VE Day. The war is
over. The newly crowned queen waves from the balcony.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has landed.
Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Capital at risk.
Hello, welcome to The Wall Show. I'm Sophie Downs, and I'm joined today by Chris Cummings, CEO of the Investment Association. In November, it was announced that Chris would be stepping down from his role after 10 years. Today, we'll be discussing his tenure at the IA, recent campaigns, and the focus of the trade body going forward. Thank you for joining us, Chris.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So 10 years as CEO of the Investment Association, where do you think you've had the most impact?
Oh, gosh, that's a great question to ask, because the industry has moved on in such a long way over the last 10 years. But I think it's fair to say when I arrived at the IA, we were going through a period of radical change in the industry, perhaps not terribly well understood by policymakers, and we were facing into the FCA's market study on investment management, a real drains-up exercise, the biggest that the FCA has ever conducted into the industry. And part of the first role was actually to better acquaint our regulator with what investment management was actually all about. Sounds like an odd thing to say, but why would the regulator understand the industry in the way that market participants do, unless we sit down and actually unpack those issues for them? So really, from day one, there's been an awful lot on my plate. But I think the biggest change, and it's what we're going through now, is that move away from what we call safetyism, the overabundance of caution in public policy, in the regulatory architecture, and perhaps even in how some firms operate as well. And we've seen that incremental approach really since the financial crisis of layer after layer of well-meaning regulation. But the cumulative impact has been to protect retail investors, particularly out of capital markets. And look where we are today. We're oversaved, underinvested. People think they need £46,000 in cash before they can start investing. And so it's really important to call all of that out and actually help government, the regulator, our own industry, start re-engaging with the public again. And we're having a tremendous moment, and I'm really, really excited for 2026 when all of these things come to fruition. So exciting times ahead.
Mm-hmm. How would you describe the voice of the IA? Would you say you're an advocate? Are you a challenger? Are you a referee?
Morgan Freeman. Because what I like to think is that we have a respected voice. Sorry, I was looking for a suitable analogy, but you know, if Morgan Freeman was sitting around your dining room table, okay, he's got such insight, such gravitas in how he speaks, and actually a bit of a twinkle in his eye. You know, he's somebody who's not afraid to ask the odd question and to provoke. And maybe if the IA was a character, I'd like to think we were something like that. But we're definitely the champion of the industry, unashamedly, here to encourage more people to start saving and then start investing in a way that makes sense for them. That we carry the respect of policymakers. They know that we are an organisation that is data-driven, is evidence-led, that comes to the party wanting to engage in a way that's going to always benefit the investor. Because the industry will configure itself. You know, there's so much innovation going on in the industry. I'd hate to think that the IA was ever seen as an organisation that was purely out to protect the status quo, because no successful industry ever stands still. So yes, we're an advocate. We do challenge. We challenge our own members as much as we challenge regulators. And that's why one of the first things I did when I arrived at the IA was open our membership up to fintechs. Because I knew our industry was on the verge of profound changes, that we would have to embrace technology, we'd have to embrace new ways of getting things done. And good heavens, we've seen that wash through now. And look, the IA is the biggest buy-side fintech hub in Europe, easily. That brings technologists into the room. It means that we can have proper discussions with policymakers about real-world outcomes, and we get to learn lessons from around the world about innovation. And that's the secret of our continued success.
How do you balance those two prongs, I guess, of your role, being an industry advocate, but also being a credible voice to policymakers?
I think because we're a purpose-led organisation, you know, it's not just about protecting our members, right or wrong. You know, if we see things that are uncomfortable, we do call them out. And I think policymakers respect that. And they get the sense that the industry isn't just here for itself. The fiduciary duty runs through our industry like the proverbial stick of Blackpool Rock, which I do know I have to explain to a lot of people these days because there's just not as much of it around as there used to be. But that separates us out from many other industries, many other parts of financial services. The fact that we know it's not our money. We're being trusted with retail investors, little all, to do well by them, as much as through wholesale and institutional investors who can bring profound changes through major investments into high growth companies, long established ones, financing the infrastructure. And so we're recognised as being a credible voice around the table because we speak for one of the UK's few truly successful global industries. But it's an industry that's always prioritising doing the right thing by its client.
Mm-hmm. Were there any initiatives you'd wish you'd had more time to tackle?
Oh, good heavens. So one of my passions is financial literacy. Okay, I happen to chair a financial literacy charity as well because doing more on financial literacy was always number 11 in my top 10 things to do today. And look, as a nation, we're really old when it comes to talking about money. You know, the FCA does research. People would apparently rather talk about their sex lives with their former partner than talk about money. So it's culturally not something that we're comfortable doing, that we do. And yet that means that, you know, investing is a social activity. You know, people talk to their parents or their friends or they go online and yet we don't really have the conversations that I see our colleagues in North America do, whether that's the US or Canada or indeed other parts of the world. There's not that learned experience through people growing up of money management and sensible decision making. And so I've always thought that actually we should be doing more on financial literacy, probably reflecting on my own childhood growing up, where certainly money was never talked about in a positive way. And so recognizing that actually if people are equipped with the tools to ask sensible decisions, to ask sensible questions and then make the right decision, it will have a profound impact on their life. They'll live happier, more resilient, financially fulfilled lives and a better retirement because of it. So yeah, financial literacy is, as you can tell, it's one of the passions that I have. And it's an area where I think we can always strive to do more.
Mm-hmm. And I want to come back to the retail campaign. Mm-hmm. Got a lot to talk about in that. But would you say that this education piece and this financial literacy, is that the biggest challenge the industry is up against currently, would you say?
It's definitely in my top one. But I've got a couple of others as well. So look, the UK benefits massively from having the investment management industry writ large here, because that means that we've not only got brilliant people in amazing jobs paying quite a bit of tax, which government always likes, but look, the UK is recognised as being the most international of investment management centres. The US is bigger because of the scale of the domestic market, but when it comes to Europe, we're bigger than our next three competitors, and our members think, act and invest internationally. And that's a real gift to UK PLC, but it means we've got to stay internationally competitive. And when I look around the world, I used to be president of the Global Investment Management Association as well as the UK one, which meant I got to look across jurisdictions around the world. And some are just running harder than the UK is at the moment. And that's why we've got to prioritise our international competitiveness, not just with the European Union being great partners, being frenemies, being co-competitors. You know, there's a lot that we have to do with our colleagues in the European Union, but looking much more broadly. So across the Middle East, I see great innovation happening, and they are going incredibly quickly in building a sophisticated investment management industry. If I look at, across into Asia, Japan is marketing itself as the investment management nation. So, I mean, Japan has got great ambitions for building its own industry. Across the world, you see different jurisdictions who look at the UK's position with envious eyes. and would love to have a bigger investment management industry. And who can blame them? You know, we're capital light, we don't trouble the scorer, we've got a great reputation, and we're at the heart of a growth economy. So for me, number one is working with policymakers to help them understand that as a truly successful industry that's not needed too much support from government, we do need them to be on side. And when it comes to our regulator, we need pro-technology competitiveness. So we need them to be engaging with technological innovation in the way that we are. And we need them to always have an eye on what are other jurisdictions doing. Not a race to the bottom. Absolutely not. But just to make sure that the UK doesn't have a premium applied to it in every case, with every piece of regulation being tried and tested in the UK first, or having a UK finish to international regulation. And it's great that the FCA has now got a competitiveness objective, but that needs to cascade all the way through its organisation, from policy through supervision. And that's got to be meaningful for the future. So for me, it's those three things. It's around financial literacy, because that speaks to how we can excite the UK population to be investing more. It speaks to our international role, protecting and preserving and helping to bolster a truly successful global industry. And it's also about the international competitiveness challenge and working with our regulator, co-creating the future with the regulator, so that on asset, fund, and other areas in tokenization, the UK has a globally leading position. It's mission critical.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot to go unpack within that. I mean, but I'm curious, Chris, having had that level of insight and engagement, what will you miss most about your role in the Investment Association?
Well, first and foremost, my team. I have an amazing group of people at the IA, subject matter experts, people who are just incredibly bright, but have a passion for the industry, which kind of sounds maybe a little bit odd, but the people at the IA really care about our industry and they care about investors. So, yeah, working with my great group of colleagues. Representing an industry that is open to change, knows actually that its future is based on innovation, and has that commitment to do the right thing by the investor. So, look, if you're representing that kind of industry, everything gets very easy after that. So those are the big things that I'm going to really miss. But you know what? 10 years. 10 years. It's time to go on and do something different. Ready for the next challenge.
Let's talk about the retail campaign then. I know it's on everyone's lips at the moment. So for anyone that might not be aware, the retail campaign is an industry-wide education initiative announced by Rachel Reeves as part of the LEED reforms to provide information and support to potential investors. So before we go into it, what do we actually mean by education and who are we referring to? Because in my experience, this has become a little bit of a buzzword, with people never going into the details of what this actually entails in practice.
So look, we have a nation of people who are terrific savers, but are underinvested. And that's because of a variety of things, public policy, the regulatory architecture, the way that companies have spoken to people, all of which has delivered a message to the UK population that saving is good. Saving is what you do to get money. Investing is what you do when you've got money that almost you can afford to lose because it must be risky. I'm told that your capital is at risk multiple times. On average, I think 7 times as you go through the journey. It's a bit like booking an EasyJet flight. You go online and EasyJet tell you how many people have died in aircraft crashes. And then you get to the airport, and above the airport is a sign that says how many people have died in airplane crashes. And as you're getting on the airplane, somebody takes you to one side and says, in this type of airplane, it's crashed this many times. Are you really going to get on the airplane? And yet, all of those things could be argued as just being, you know, natural risk warnings. And we've kind of done the same thing in investment. We've been so busy convincing ourselves that actually because something's risky, we should be encouraging people to think very deeply about it. But treating them as econs, what Thaler and Sunstein called econs, not normal human beings, and putting up these partly emotional and partly intellectual barriers to investing to the point now where, look, we know if you put £10,000 into a cash ISA today, 10 years ago, today that would be worth about £8,900 due to the pernicious effect of inflation. If you'd put it into a pretty ordinary global equity fund, you'd have about £19,000. So our discouragement away from risk has meant that individuals are poorer, families are poorer. As a nation, we are certainly poorer. And that's robbed our high growth companies of the finance, the investment that they've needed. And so they've gone to the US and other jurisdictions. But so what we've landed with government and the regulator is a position where instead of blaming everybody, because the industry would blame the regulator, why do you put these rules in place? The regulator would say, go and talk to government, they made us do it. And government would blame the industry and say, come on, you should be more, you know, animal spirits. We got to a point where we said, it really doesn't matter who's to blame. We're just not in a great place. Can we work together to fix this? And so the education part is, let's actually now have a grown-up conversation with people to say, of course saving is good, but investing is better. And there are different risk categories, and you're not going to lose every penny. There are just different approaches to investing that mean you can put these things in. So we're trying to unpack that conversation. So the retail investment campaign, fully funded by the industry, 19 companies involved, is about talking to people who have got more than £10,000 sitting in cash. We've got 2 million people in our country who've got more than £100,000 in cash. And so what we're trying to do is speak to them in a way that comes at them from the side, and talk to them about, you know, why investing might be right for them. Think about it, take the next step, think about investing. Which should also, by the way, be reassuring for those people who already are investing. Because there's nothing like being told that you're a smart cookie and you've done the right thing to reassure you and probably get you to do some more investing. And hand in hand with that, the Chancellor also asked if we would lead a review of risk warnings. So we can move away from that really arid, your capital is at risk, that's now become wallpaper, that actually discourages investment. And so we're moving now to a position of risk and reward statements, pointing out that investment carries risk, but so does saving. But actually it carries return and reward, and to have a longer, better, healthier retirement, more financially resilient retirement, investing is right for you. Mm-hmm. So, this is... it's an opportunity to reset the UK's risk appetite. It's not just an advertising campaign. It's culture change for a nation.
Mm-hmm. And presumably this is a multi-year.
It's a multi-year, multi-million pound campaign. Mm-hmm. There's not a TV advert in the world that you could run for 6 weeks to convince an entire nation to improve its risk appetite. But, you know, other jurisdictions have done it. The US did it during the 1950s with their Buy a Share of America campaign. They're running something quite similar in India at the moment. I know other jurisdictions have also sought to address this underinvestment culture that they've had. And for me, this is really exciting because coming back to the financial literacy point, you know, we did auto-enrolment in the UK. Now, auto-enrolment it's a wonderful policy success. What, 11 million people have now got a pension scheme that they wouldn't have had in the past. Sadly, we didn't do auto-escalation, so they're not investing enough into their pension scheme. And, you know, we can come back and talk about that because, you know, we're absolutely convinced the Pensions Commission should be looking at issues of how much people will get in retirement rather than just contribution rates. Anyway, but what we didn't do with auto-enrolment, and we really should have done, is recognise that was a wonderful moment to start financial literacy, because as people started to put money into their pension, a kind of buy-and-forget activity, what we could have done is said, oh, do you know you've got 3 months' salary in there? Wow, that's suddenly a lot of money. Actually, you've got enough money to buy a car. Wow, that is a lot of money. You've got enough money for a deposit for a flat. In London, I hear you say. Good heavens. So there were lots of life event moments where actually that auto-enrolment process could have been turned into a golden gift of financial literacy. Certainly, as Ireland is now introducing a version of auto-enrolment, we've been talking to the Irish government about the opportunity to use it as a financial literacy campaign, as well as taking care of a profound social issue that's emerging in Ireland. So look, the UK is great at doing innovative things. We're better at learning from them and then sharing that with the rest of the world about here are the mistakes we made as well. Always a weird thing. People in other countries don't do that. They don't talk themselves up. We talk about the things we got wrong. But that does mean that when we think about the success of the retail campaign, look, the European Commission, very interested in it. Other parts of the world, other countries around the world want to know about the retail investment campaign, because as it works in the UK, other jurisdictions will follow it. And that's a wonderful opportunity, yes, for investment management, but more importantly for the clients we want to serve in other parts of the world.
Mm-hmm. And the campaign's set to launch in April 2026. What's going on behind the scenes currently?
Everything. We have a really, we've got a fantastic group of CEOs who sit around the table from the 19 member firms who are funding it. We've got a brilliant team of marketing, PR, social media experts who are leaning in, kind of providing the technical insights to generate the campaign. We're working with MNC Saatchi, who are just amazing. So creative. So swan-like. We are proceeding. The things that are really exciting, though, are the way that Treasury is participating. We have Treasury officials at meetings. We've obviously got the support of the Chancellor, the City Minister. But we've also got the clear engagement of the FCA and the Ombudsman and MAPS as well, particularly looking at the wider risk warnings review. So this is a collective effort. It's government, it's regulator, it's industry, all trying to solve for a noble purpose of getting more people investing in our country. And I don't need to tell you the importance of that and the impact it will have for them as individuals, but across the nation and to finance our companies. You know, this is a real multiple win opportunity.
Mm-hmm. What will good look like ahead of launch?
So good is going to be for us a wonderful campaign that breaks in April. That's going to be a year-long, multi-year campaign. And we have clear KPIs for measuring success and for tracking where things go well and things go. There are lessons to be learnt. And those are around the number of people, the percentage of people who say investing is for me, because well over a third of people in the UK today say that investing is simply not for them because of the fear that they've been told that they could lose every single penny if they start to invest and they can't afford to do that. So we want to reach out to those people and bring them to the party. So there's a lot about sentiment tracking, more people thinking they could invest. There's a lot about actual activity. So how far through the investing process do people get? And it's not going to be one and done. I mean, I'd love to think people will see the campaign and that will move them straight from savers to investors. But you know what? There'll probably be two or three attempts before people get there. And then ultimately, of course, the number of people who are new investors, the number of people who are existing investors investing more. And I'm absolutely convinced that we will address the thorniest of issues, which is people see investing, risky activity. They think about their pension. Cannot take risk with my pension. I'm not an investor when it comes to my pension. And yet we all know that people who have pensions are investors. And so it's how we cross that Rubicon of helping people think, recognize that as somebody who's investing into a pension, a long-term savings plan, an investment, that they are investors. And then thinking about what that means to them. You know, every day we take decisions about which brands that we support, which companies we choose to engage with, which shops we go into. You know, do you buy Yorkshire tea? I'm a Yorkshireman. I have to buy Yorkshire tea. Yorkshire Gold's the best. Or do you go and buy a different brand? Well, that's the kind of engagement, that emotional attachment, that intellectual engagement that we're looking to generate through this campaign as well, so that people feel they have a bigger stake in society. And I really do think that that's massively exciting for the future of our democracy, for the long-term health of our nation. If we can get more people feeling that they've got a stake in this country's success, imagine what a different country we could be. Mm-hmm. So it's really quite exciting.
Very exciting. I think that's quite an interesting point. I mean, you traditionally speak to governments and institutions. What kind of a voice do you think that this group has to embody to really raise the attention of this cohort of people?
Oh, so it's got to be one that's authoritative but not lecturing. And one that actually speaks to them and the emotional worries and concerns they've got. I read some fascinating research a little while ago about how people see themselves in future. There's this rose-tinted image of, oh, good heavens, yes, I'm going to be outgoing and athletic and so on when I'm old. But then you talk to people about what happens as they age, and a funny thing happens, that there's this mental disconnect. Nobody sees themselves as being old. So, you know, Jonathan Swift, every man would live long, but no man would grow old. And so sometimes we don't like the person we're going to be when we're old, and we're not going to look after them. So that's why the spend it today mentality can be quite pronounced. And so helping people understand the different life stages, how they can plan better for the future, but not everything's so deferred gratification you don't get to enjoy it, which is why I've always been a fan of payroll splitting. So you get the benefit of a pay rise today, but some of it goes towards your pension. So you still get the immediate hit, lovely dopamine hit and more money in your bank, but the long-term security of more going into your pension. So getting that messaging right, where we are addressing people's deep needs for security long-term, but doing it in a way that's a little fun, definitely engaging. That term, Morgan Freeman, twinkle in the eye approach. You know, that's we've got to be exciting enough that people want to join the party, not boring and lecturing and telling them, oh my God, your capital's at risk, you know. That's never going to work.
Mm-hmm. I mean, as you said, the UK does have this culture of saving. And I suppose in an environment where we're seeing rising taxes, inflation, do you think the retail campaign will go far enough?
So there's never a good moment to start a campaign. If we wanted to wait for the economy to turn and everyone to feel better off, we could be waiting a very long time. And there's a wonderful old expression, which is, you know, when's the best time to plant a tree? 100 years ago or today? Well, we didn't do it 100 years ago, so we better get on and get it done today. And for those of us in the industry, we know that we should be worried more about a generation of pensioner poverty that could be coming towards us. This is perhaps the last generation of people retiring from defined benefit schemes, people starting to realise that the defined contribution schemes are totally different and perhaps they've not been contributing enough. Auto-enrolment coming in, but not having anywhere near the level of contribution rates. So as we think about the future of the next decade, 20 years, we're just underinvested as a nation. That means people will be poorer again in their pensions. And that's a heavier burden on the state. But it's all curable. There is something that can be done about this, which is where the retail investment campaign actually starts that deeper conversation about the importance of investing today for a better tomorrow. So yeah, no, I understand why people could say, but Chris, you know, investing is risky, and you know, what will happen when you launch the campaign and markets go down? And you know, Sod's Law probably will launch the campaign the following day, the markets will tank. But you know what? Investing's a long-term game, and we will be failing in our duty if we don't talk to people about the difference between risk and volatility. Well, that's an exciting, happy subject, isn't it? But you know, we have to provide people with sufficient wherewithal that they can be reassured that investing is for them, and investing responsibly in the right way that makes sense in their personal circumstances. Which is why the April date, launch the campaign, improve the risk warnings, the launch of targeted support, all of those things coming together at that time, that's why it's so exciting. You know, why is it different this time? That's why it's different this time. And with the full support and backing of the government and the close engagement of the FCA.
Mm-hmm. And there's a whole host of initiatives, as you just mentioned, going on
at
the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the PR campaign around it will be really exciting. We're doing some things that perhaps parts of the industry have never done before, engaging with finfluencers, getting people talking about their finances, their investment, away from the money pages, getting it towards the front end of the newspaper, having it on breakfast TV, dare I say, being on amazingly exciting podcasts like this one. There's just a different set of audiences we want to reach through the campaign. And that's why I think, you know, it's an exciting moment.
I mean, I wanted to ask you, where should the eye focus its attention over the next 5 years? But it sounds like that might be a key area.
So the industry is going through the retailisation of our offering. We are, we're thinking really deeply about what's been called life beyond mutual funds, what happens to enable people to have personal asset allocation strategies, all of which is founded on the industry moving to a totally digitalized future. And that's the really exciting part. I think our industry is at the foothills of those big technological changes that we've got to get right in the UK, because other jurisdictions are looking at exactly the same trajectory and are perhaps moving a little faster than we are. And that's why I was delighted with what the City Minister has been announcing about a more digital agenda for the industry across financial services, while we're working so closely with the FCA now on the tokenization agenda, money market funds in general. bringing private markets into the mainstream in a way that makes sense for individuals so they understand what the risk premium looks like, but also the illiquidity premium can pay off for them. So this is a particularly exciting moment in the transformation of our industry. And I think, if anything, the next 10 years will go faster than the last 10.
Mm-hmm. So as a final question, if you can indulge me slightly, if you could give one piece of advice to your successor, what would it be?
Oh, enjoy it. It's a fantastic job. We do stand on the crossroads between building a relationship with government so they better understand why investment management is the growth engine for our economy. It's the engine that drives every other productive part of every other industry. And that's exciting. That's a good relationship with government. I think working with the FCA in a way now that is based on co-creation of 21st century rules and approaches. So that actually what we're looking at is how we maintain regulatory standards in a world that's very rapidly changing. Very rapidly changing. And there is no guarantee that the UK should remain the most international investment management centres. But we can. And of course, working with an industry, sometimes leading, maybe occasionally at the back, nudging, mostly in the middle, listening, like a good shepherd, to help the industry better understand what life on the public square means for it in the 21st century. But take pride. It's a wonderful industry to be working in with a noble purpose. And that's starting to come good. So, yeah, whoever takes this job after me, and they better be good, I think it's the best job to have in the industry.
Well, that's a very nice note to end it on, I think. Thank you for joining us, Gareth.
Sophie, thank you.
We'll see you next time on The Wealth Show.
But today is VE Day. The boys
the newly crowned queen waves from the balcony.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has
landed. Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Capital at risk.